Welcome to the San Diego Psychological Association's podcast, Diving into Healing. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Carcel. This podcast has been developed with the intent to inform and educate the general public and providers and should not be relied upon for any other purpose. The content, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and not those of the San Diego Psychological Association. On today's show, we will be discussing group nature-based therapy and how it can help us heal. I'm happy to introduce our expert and guest, Ms. Natalie Small. Welcome, Natalie, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I love that this podcast even exists and we're diving into so many fun topics. So thank you.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. And I agree. This has actually been such a wonderful experience and I feel so honored to host. And it's definitely been something that I'm learning a lot about. And first and foremost, I just want to say I am so excited about this topic. I was just speaking to a client recently who had never been in therapy before, and they were really concerned kind of about the conventional psychotherapies. And it was amusing to me because I know that I certainly thought about that. The vision of therapy has always been, or at least the conceptualization of it, has been sitting on a couch and talking to somebody about your past. And while that is true, traditional psychotherapies have wonderful results, and there's a lot of evidence-based research on that. There's also other forms of therapy that are so exciting and also have wonderful research to support the outcomes. And this is one of them. Group nature-based therapy is a very exciting opportunity for people and clients and practitioners to branch out of the conventional psychotherapy. So very excited to talk to you about that. And before we jump in, I think it'd be great to hear a little bit about your background and how you became interested in group nature-based therapy.
Yeah. Ooh, it gives me chills just even hearing you talk about like the expansiveness of what therapy can be. So my background is I'm a marriage and family therapist, and I finished up my master's degree and got to a point where I was just like, talk therapy felt like it was getting to this wall, this barrier with my clients. And so I was like, maybe this just isn't for me. And this, like, maybe therapy wasn't the direction that I wanted to go. And so I sold everything, started working on boats, and ended up in South America and started like landing myself in Buenos Aires. And while I was there, I learned that they have this really deep connection with therapy. Their streets are named after famous psychologists. And so I started like moving off of boats and got a job with culture shock therapy for au pairs that were coming in, because there's a huge au pair community. And so helping them with like integrating into the culture in Argentina and then also reintegrating back home, so reentry. And then through that, found a supervisor, Garciela Botoni, who at the time was the president of the International Expressive Arts Therapy Association, and was working with her. And that it just blew my mind. It was welcoming the body back into the healing process using all these somatic tools and art and movement and bilateral. And it was just, it's like, oh my gosh, like we're not even talking and so much healing is happening. And we're not getting stuck in the story and repeating it. We're getting like change is happening. Resiliency is building. And so I came back, I got like refueled and reignited and came back to the States to finish up my license and started working with safe houses of women who are getting out of trafficking and sexual violent situations, and was doing art therapy with them, utilizing all the somatic trainings that I had learned. And through that, they started asking me like, well, what are your art modalities and somatic modalities that you use for your own healing? And I was like, well, when I'm grieving, when I'm excited, when I'm frustrated or angry, like I go to the ocean and I dive in, I surf, I sail. The ocean has been this really safe space for expressive emoting, and re-regulating for myself. And so I was like, I let them know that's what I do. And they're like, well, let's go to the ocean. It's like, well, like we have to be in this room and we have to use these different tools. And finally I was like, you know what? Why not? We talked to their host mom and we set everything up and we went to the ocean and did the same structure, same container as our art therapy small group programs, but at the beach in the water. And so rather than scarves and clay and paints as our art tools, we had surfboards. And to see the shifts in these women happening within just one session And so we completely shifted everything over to group nature-based therapy sessions. And I just haven't left since.
Wow. Gosh, that's a phenomenal story. Your background is so fun. And I'm really excited to talk about that transition into the surf therapy aspect of it. And, you know, one of the things that I think can be really helpful is to define group nature-based therapy. And from what I understand, it's really a postmodern experiential approach where we're integrating elements of expressive arts, of nature, and this really increases connectivity to our basic evolution, to who we are. You know, I was reading a little bit on the research of this, and I really like the way a researcher stated it. We evolved in nature, and it's only been in our recent history of urbanization and the Industrial Revolution that we've confined ourselves to the indoors. It's really a small percentage of our entire history as a species. As a matter of fact, I think this, if I'm remembering this correctly, the researcher said it was 0.01% of the human experience on this planet has been indoors. So that means basically 99.99% of our lives, our ancestors, has been outdoors. And I think that's so important because that disconnect is fundamental in who we are. And a lot of times, and the research supports this incredibly, there's one after another research studies on group nature-based therapy, whether it's doing a hiking activity outdoors, a mindful practice outdoors, surf therapy, expressive arts therapy, that these forms of therapy are really helping, especially with people with trauma. And I'm just excited about this because it gives additional modalities for people to experience therapies in ways that are not conventional. And that is exciting. And I want to make sure I'm not the expert here. You are. I'm learning a lot about this myself. But can you add to that, or is there a definition of group nature-based therapy or how you're approaching therapy that could be helpful to our listeners?
Yeah. I mean, I love that reality check that we are part of nature. We are of nature. And so to be excluding ourselves from nature during this time frame, that is spurring these, like when you're disconnected from self, depression, anxiety, fear, everything just sits so much heavier. And I think for me, I see this combination of nature, but also community. And that's why we've done the group model. And when you look back at the history of healing, people healed within community. People birthed within community. You weren't isolated in your healing process. And so you would go to the medicine woman or the shaman, and it would be done within a community setting. Or when a woman was birthing, that all of the women, girls, elder, everybody was there to partake in that process. Whether it's healing, physical healing, or emotional healing, birthing, death, everything is done in so much isolation. Mm-hmm. That we lose that opportunity to really be seen and honored in the difficult things and the celebratory things. And so being able to really like come back to being in community. Mm-hmm. And I think that combination of coming back to our animalistic roots of being in nature and coming back to our human roots of like, we are of community. Mm-hmm. We are humans of connection. And when we don't have that, that's when we're dysregulated. Our neurological system is just like, what's going on? I don't know. I'm not connecting with others. I'm not connecting with nature. So I don't know how to connect with myself.
Right.
And so when we have all those three connected, we are our fullest selves in this world.
That's wonderful. I'm curious about your experiences with the healing nature part of this practice. So maybe we could start with the individual. How is this happening in nature, and how does it heal the individual? And then maybe we could segue to the community, because I think you bring up a good point. It's not just the individual who's receiving this form of treatment, but I'm curious about the community aspect as well. So maybe you can explain, and we could start with the healing nature part of this for healing the individual.
I mean, a great example is as we are accessing, so with surf therapy specifically, there are many times when we're doing a surf therapy program and we can't go into the ocean because it's too toxic. And so just that like very tangible reality of if we don't do our part to heal her, then we won't have that access to our own healing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also, I was doing a lot of work within the art therapy realm around the power of not just going out and buying the art supplies that you need, but noticing like what is the waste around us and how can we repurpose that and create something beautiful out of that? And that not only is healing our earth, but also this really powerful metaphor, especially with trauma recovery and sexual abuse, of taking something that has been thrown aside, that has been seen as waste, that has been seen as having no honor, no respect, no one wants it, and being able to turn it into something that people want and desire and has honor again. And that's our own healing process when we are healing from trauma. And so there is this like very reciprocal relationship between the earth's healing and our healing. We are not separate from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to see it as like one of the ocean's traumas is plastic and is the pollution that we've done towards her, our human footprint on her. And she's doing like, she has all these amazing resources and ways that she's naturally healing herself, like creating new algae that are eating the plastics and like all this radical things. And so it's also this beautiful metaphor of how like we can within our own selves have these resources within us to heal those different traumas. But it also takes like us humans showing up to help heal her as well. And so that brings in that community piece of like for ourselves, it also takes like our community showing up to help us heal as well. And so it doesn't have to be done by ourselves. So in positive psychology, there's this understanding like the highest level of happiness is that not only you notice that you have something good within you, but you notice the importance of sharing that with others and giving that to others. And so when you are experiencing like deep depression or anxiety, it can be difficult to even notice that you have any good in you. And so that's like where we start from is like feeling you go into the ocean and all of a sudden you feel joy for the first time. You're like, oh, I can actually like, I am depressed, but I can also feel joy. I am grieving, but I can also feel peace. And so you feel this different emotion that you haven't felt in a while. And then you continue to surf, you continue to engage with nature, you continue to feel that. And you're like, oh, maybe not only did I feel joy that one moment, but I have joy within me. I have peace within me. And so then as you start sitting with that and understanding that that is not just something, but it is actually who you are, then it's this natural integration of wanting to share that with others. And that's what we see with nature as well. This natural integration of like, oh my gosh, I have received healing from the ocean. Now I want to heal her. And then I want to share her with others because I want everybody to feel these like all that is possible within ourselves.
I love this. I'm going to say that this philosophy is certainly so important. And I like the conceptualization of the individual healing through purpose. If I'm hearing you correctly, there's this purpose in not only going out and engaging in the group activity, and we can talk a little bit about procedural, like how does this work? What is the application of this type of treatment? But, you know, the individual going out in a group setting right there, we're integrating into community of like similar people, like-minded people, and we're finding purpose. And the idea of this being also a benefit holistically and in a grand scheme of healing the earth is truly important. And I think there's so many facets to this that go beyond just the traditional norms of healing internally. It extends beyond that. Kind of, I think a little bit of Dr. Daryl Suam, which talks about the individual at the center, where we're really working on ourselves, really healing the internalization of our backgrounds, the trauma. And then it extends outward. It's important to include our community and our nuclear support system and to start extending ourselves a little bit outwards to see how we are affecting, you know, and what place we have in the outer sphere of ourselves. And then even bigger than that is the global community, and that the empathy that we can have for nature impacts our global people, our community outside of ourselves, people that we haven't even met. By taking care of ourselves, taking care of nature, it's just a win-win. We continuously have this win-win. So I think it's just great to talk about this in that context as well. And you brought up our ancestors in the sense of tribal, in our tribal sense. That is so true. that we are pack animals. We are not supposed to be in isolation. And if anything, we've seen this pandemic really test our abilities to function in isolation. Increase in depression, anxiety, stress factors, physiological symptoms, all of this has occurred when we shut down. And it's still occurring right now. There's a fear-based piece. It's very hard for us not to engage in going outside and being in our community. And I think the more we see that, my hope is that the more we can keep branching out in these types of therapies, specifically group nature-based therapy. But I wanted to talk a little bit about how this works, and feel free to comment on anything I just said, but I think it might be helpful for people who are listening. Who are the target folks in this? Who would benefit most? How it works? Like, what is the procedures of doing this? So I know that's a kind of big, broad question, but any summary of that would be helpful.
Yeah, and I'll actually backtrack for a moment as well. As you were talking about that kind of like starting with the individual to the community to the global, that is a pattern that you see in nature and that you see in indigenous wisdoms. Mm-hmm. I've spent a lot of time in Peru, and like their symbol for Mamacocha or Mother Ocean and Mother Earth is a spiral. And it is that piece of like, as you go deeper, you're also expanding. And so there's this constant, and it's happening at the same time. It's not like you have, once you get yourself figured out, then you can start working with community and then you can start working with nature. It's naturally all flowing and spiraling at the same time. And that's how our healing journey is. Nothing, like, we don't live in this linear, we live in this spiral. And you see that throughout history and culture and within nature. A lot of shells and different things in nature have this spiral that is happening naturally. Yeah. And I feel like that for me, that one of my greatest teachers in this process is pausing and looking towards mm-hmm. nature and being able to see, like, what is she teaching me? And we come up with all these new theories and models and this and that. And we think that we're all like revolutionary. It's like, this has all been done before. And a lot of it has been done outside of being human. We can see it around us all the time. And so always taking that moment to pause and look to nature for those models. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she knows what she's doing. She's lived a long, long more time than we have. And so as we like moving into the question that you asked on like, what is the model? How does it work? It's based off of that understanding of looking towards nature. And since we're specifically working with the ocean as our medicine, looking at like how waves are built and how things build, peak, and then come back down into those troughs. And you have this like start, peak, and digression. And that creates this sense of safety, sense of ability to really show up, sense of consistency. And so all of our programs, we don't focus on talk therapy and processing and telling story. It's all bringing it back to our body and letting our body guide us. So as a story does come up, and they do, it's taking that moment to be like, ooh, as you're speaking that, what do you notice in your body? And as the group is sitting in that space listening, what do y'all notice in your bodies? What do you need to do for your body right now? And being able to like support and guide each other in that. And so it's always coming back to the body and letting the body be reintegrated in. I think culturally, our mind has been given so much power, especially like mindfulness and all these tools that our mind is capable of are so important and so powerful. But it is also like reconnecting with the truth of our bodies and the wisdom of our bodies, and trauma is stored in the body. And so if we don't welcome the body back into the healing process, we can mentally and mindfully like work through it, but it keeps coming. And so being able to really free our bodies as well as our minds and our spirits, is the goal. And so like, even when we're like, a lot of people are like, what is surf therapy? What is nature therapy? You like have a therapy session and then you go to nature, or you like talk about it on the beach and then you go surfing. And there are some models that are like that, but for Groundswell's model, it's the whole process, whether we're on the beach or in the water, whether you're surfing or swimming or just looking at the waves, all of that is an opportunity for healing and growing together. And so we actually practice Rick Hansen's model for healing, which is, he has his book, Hardwiring Happiness. And I've like morphed it or like expanded it. And it's not just, it's like a 4-step model. And it's about like, you have a positive experience, you enrich it by sharing it with others, being in community around it, you absorb it by letting it like be in your body, noticing what's happening in your body, and then linking it, like connecting it to something negative that's happened and being able to reframe it. And so for us, it's like, it's not just only doing that with positive experiences. It's also doing that with negative experiences, with things that have hurt us. Like, and I think that's that piece of community aspect that's so important. Oftentimes when something negative happens in our lives, we hide it. We don't tell people about it. We pretend it didn't happen. We shove it down. We try to get away from that experience as quickly as possible from our bodies. We disassociate. And so taking a moment, and this is where surfing is so much fun, because you have waves that are epic and you have waves that are just like wipe you out. And so every wave, whether it's a like positive one or a negative one, you take that moment to experience it. And you take that opportunity to be in community with it, whether it was a wipeout or the best wave of your life, like be in community, celebrate it with each other, be seen, be honored in whatever it was that happened. And then taking a moment to like notice, what do I feel in my body? Am I feeling like super jittery and I need to like shake it out? Am I feeling like my heart beating fast? Is my respiration changing? So being able to check in with your body and then taking that moment to be like, what does this mean about me? What does this mean about the world around me? How can I take this experience and connect it to other experiences I've had in my life to grow and change and like free myself to be my fullest self? So it doesn't just have to be positive waves or positive experiences, but that can also be practiced when difficult things happen as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Natalie, I am going to sign up. I want to try this. I have to say, it's so exciting to hear the connection and how, I just can't even imagine how your participants, how your clients feel in this experience. And, you know, I want to say to everyone listening, there's extensive research to demonstrate the physical benefits from group nature-based therapy. We see things like a decrease in a reduction in stress responses, increase in physiological relaxation, increase in immune functioning recovery, improvement in basic metabolic and mental systems. It's overall a wonderful way for us to kickstart the brain into our natural sense of who we are. I was talking to somebody recently, and I'm a big fan of somatic processing and Dr. Peter Levine and the theory of somatic processing. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the research in this is that we are animals. I think we forget that. I think we've disconnected so much, again, going back to that urbanization and just kind of enclosing ourselves in these concrete jungles that we live in now, even in suburbia, it is not the same. We've lost connection to our basic fundamentals of nature. And one of the things that I think is really important is that time and time again, we see that when we are out in nature and when there is research and actual studies that we can follow a person through this type of process, they start out at a baseline that's sometimes not great. Where their vitals are high. Actually, this has gone mainstream. I recall on CNN, Dr. Sanjay Gupta did a whole special on this of nature-based therapy. And their process was that they measured all the participants prior to their nature hike. So it was about, a 2 or 3 hour hike outdoors. And it was supposed to, they were doing mindfulness activities in a group setting outdoors. But the whole thing was to measure vitals prior and then vitals post experience. And it was pretty remarkable. There was some dramatic decreases in everyone's physiological vitals. And we, you know, for, I think Dr. Gupta himself, he was just stating that he started at a very not great baseline. And by the time the experience was over, he was what we would consider much healthier. And I think it's just that kind of connection to nature that we lose. It really is significant. And if, like, I'll go back to the pandemic, we're seeing this in vivo right now. It's horrible. what this pandemic has done. And yes, there's the stressors of just the unknown of the pandemic and of COVID, but there's also the reality of isolation and not being able to connect. And when we think about animals, they are so good at this. They are masters of processing in the moment. They don't avoid pain. You can see this by natural observation. One of the things that Dr. Levine talks about, and I love using this as an example, you know, if an antelope is being chased by a cheetah and it's a predator-prey situation, the antelope goes into fight-flight mode, right? It's flighting, it's running, it's trying to save its life. And if it needs to, most of the time fighting for a prey does not work out well. So fleeing is a goal. But if they are able to flee and they make it out and they're able to escape to get back to their herd, one of the things that you see them do is they'll stop and shake violently. They'll shake it off. So the antelope is literally shaking off all of the sympathetic response that they had in order to escape near death. That is part of what we're supposed to do. That part of the problem with humans is we have disconnected from our natural abilities to handle and go through a natural anxiety loop and do it effectively. And part of this is not only the disconnect from nature, but also trauma. Trauma is a fundamental game changer of our brain. It changes the way we think. We see this constantly in research. People who have trauma have a different response mechanism, and that is because of what their experience has been, especially childhood trauma. So I think it's good that we talk a little bit about those benefits of what you're doing with people, participants. You were mentioning sexual assault survivors. You were mentioning people who have this, you know, extensive trauma history, that they're able to face and confront their fears in a natural way, connecting them back, connecting us back to what we're supposed to do, but we don't do it anymore because we've lost that connectivity in a lot of ways. Thoughts on this?
Ugh, so many. I guess there's two directions to go and to touch on. Our body knows. And so this is coming back to our natural way of being and connecting and being in group. Like with the pandemic happening, there was this big surge of like all these different things you need to buy in order to do self-love. And you need to figure out how you're going to fit all your self-care things into your already busy schedule. And you have to buy all these different things in order to do that. It was like a big upswell of turning self-care into something else that you have to add. And something else that you have to buy and do. And it's only accessible to certain people because if you don't have your magic rolly stick, you can't do it. At the same time, all of that stuff is already within us. And so it's just taking that time to reconnect with self. And it's not adding something extra to your day or to your schedule. And sometimes it's simplifying and just taking a moment to listen and taking a moment to look around and be with yourself. So I was in Peru when the pandemic hit, and it was almost like the earth was just like, oof, we've been going so fast lately. Let's just take a moment. And I literally saw out my window the environment change. The color of the ocean changed. There were different bird species that we hadn't seen there before. It was like almost like the earth was just doing a quick little pause and detox. And its life was coming back again. And I think for me, it was this reminder of, oh, I don't have to do so much to take care of myself. Sometimes it's just taking that simple pause and coming back to recognize, I'm like, oh, I have my breath. How amazing. That comes with me everywhere. I'm doing it all the time. And it's so like just even watching your breath and recognizing like, oh, as I inhale, it's engaging that activation in my system. I'm holding it. And then as I exhale, it's naturally engaging that relaxation. And so even just every single breath is this wave of like build and reaching that peak and then coming down and relaxing and releasing. And that's what's happening within our, our trauma responses are like, we're getting activated, it's peaking, and then we have to find a way to relax it. And so even just our breath is like, oh, we're just doing that. And you don't even know it. And so our body is so sneaky and so good at taking care of us. And it's just really taking those moments to pause and stop. And that's where, and even when we're looking at like trauma, and it's such a big word that's used all the time and thrown around in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. It has this like negative context of like, oh, my trauma response, or, oh, I'm getting triggered. It's like, that's your body telling you like, hey, wait a second, like check in. Are you safe? My body is trying to make sure that I'm safe. It experienced something that was painful and it wants to make sure that doesn't happen to me again. And so it's not actually a negative thing. It's our body being like, whoa, that happened once and I want to make sure you're safe. So I'm going through all the natural nervous system reactions to keep myself safe right now. And you get a chance to be like, oh, wait, I actually am safe. I do have support. I do have my power. And so I can like, I can start re-navigating that in a different way. And I, one of the women that I, in one of our first sessions that I worked with, who was overcoming sexual trauma, and she had had a compounded sexual abuse that happened on the beach. And so her trigger was sand. Sand is not safe, but because sand, just the texture and touch of sand triggered that trauma response in her, walking across the beach to be able to come sit in a circle was impossible. But we honored that she was showing up. And so we brought like the circle towards her so that way she could still be in circle and recognize like she's not being resistant. She's not being rebellious. She's showing up. Mm-hmm. And, but this trauma trigger is real. And until she knows that she is safe, she is held, she has her power, that's where that boundary is for her. Cause her body wants to like, doesn't trust sand. Like, dude, sand has been over and over and over a really bad experience for you. We don't want to go there. Let's keep you safe. And so as she gained her safety and her trust and her power, like by session 5, she was coming and sitting on the sand with us, wearing shoes. By the 7th session, she was boogie boarding and getting in the water. And so it was like this very slow progression. And so it's this reminder of like, have patience and kindness and gentleness with yourself and recognize those triggers and those responses are your body just really wanting to make sure you're okay and that you are safe. Mm-hmm. So the more you can sit with it and acknowledge it and just be with it, that's where the healing can happen.
Oh, that's great. And what a great story and what a great outcome. You know, I think for anyone who's listening that is seeking an experience like this, it's out there. And I think it's good for us to talk a little bit about how people, potential clients, people who have experienced, whether it is trauma or you're experiencing anxiety, depression, any of these symptoms, that these therapies are available to help. And they are still very much evidence-based. I want to say that there is that research. We have sufficient research to support evidence-based practices like group nature-based therapies. And they're also diverse. There's equine therapy where people are able to use the experience of horses and having that connection to animals and nature in that way. Surf therapy, as you're mentioning, and the connection to the ocean. So there's various ways, expressive arts, there's various ways that these therapies are available for people who are experiencing a variety of mental health concerns. So it's good to put that out there for people. And maybe we can talk a little bit about how people can find these resources at the end when we conclude our talk. But I did want to ask one thing. You know, one of the things that we try to promote a lot on this show is diverse populations. One thing that's we sometimes miss in conventional psychotherapy and in the past has been addressing people of diverse backgrounds. And that includes a vast majority of people. So I'm curious, how does this apply with those populations?
It's such a good question. And I think that is why I love nature group-based therapy, is because it opens the doors to welcoming those who have been traumatized and hurt by the Western medical system or have experienced lack of trust in those spaces. And even when you look at like modern day psychology, it has roots in a very like systemic oppressive, masculine space. And so like women have experienced oppression and segregation and violence within the psychology world through generations by being called lunatics. And if you spoke your voice or stood up against your husband, you were considered a lunatic and hysterical or all these different things. And so it hasn't been a very safe space for people to come and really speak what's happening and talk about it and express it and heal from it. And so to be able to hold spaces where mm-hmm. you're in a group, you're not just being therapized, but you're with peers. And so you're naturally recognizing like, okay, I'm not alone in this. There's other people in this group that look like me. We have our similarities, we have our differences, and we're all able to just show up as who we are. I think that's really important for kind of normalizing the healing process. And also nature can be accessible. And so when you like are starting to open up that door, it can be like there are also so many times where nature hasn't been accessible. And so being able to welcome in and hold safe, brave spaces for people to come together in their local nature resources allows them to create a sustainable practice of going back there. Like we work with a Syrian refugee community in San Diego and them going to the beach. They live in San Diego and don't go to the beach because it's overwhelming. They don't like what they culturally wear isn't culturally acceptable or would be stared at the beach. As a woman, you typically don't know how to drive. So how do you get there? So there's all these different barriers to get, even just to get to the beach. And then also there's a lot of trauma around most people from Syria have lost loved ones to the ocean. And so there's all these different factors coming in. And so to be able to hold a space that is like, hey, we're holding this space for you. We have the culturally appropriate equipment and gear to support you and meet you where you're at. And then they come and they're like, oh, I can do this. I do belong here. And I know how to get here now. I know like how to navigate this space, what it looks like, what it feels like. And I had this like very welcoming, positive, supportive opportunity to engage in something that priorly had been exclusive or not welcoming or traumatic. And to really like reintegrate that relationship and rebuild that relationship as like, oh, this is my space too. And this is my space for healing, for connecting, for being with my family. So it just really creates this very sustainable healing process. And as a therapist, I love group work because you're really just holding the container and letting people show up. Learn how to be in relationship with each other and support each other, to see each other and to honor each other. And all of our spaces are intersectional when it comes to trauma. I really see trauma as like, it can get really easy to like have trauma, like trauma offs, like, oh, well, your trauma is worse than my trauma, or my trauma is so tiny and your trauma is so big and blah, 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 blah. And so we get all this like, oh, well, I don't really belong because my trauma is not big enough. My trauma is too big. Are they really going to be able to hold me? And to be able to recognize like the trauma responses in our body is all the same. And it doesn't matter like the event, the thing that happened. But now we're all in this same process of experiencing it happening in our body over and over and how we can heal from it. And nature just holds this like awesome container to really be in it. And you mentioned before all the research around like the ocean has the salt water is full of magnesium, which helps regulate our nervous system. And that's what we're doing in trauma recovery and work is learning how to regulate our nervous system and build new neurological pathways. Mm-hmm. So there's just so much there that holds a powerful space for reclaiming healing, reclaiming belonging, reclaiming that like healing doesn't have to look like one box. It can hold all of us.
Natalie, this is a remarkable form of treatment and therapy, and I think it's important that we elaborate a little bit on cultural considerations with more detail and also barriers to treatment. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's a potent question that I'm constantly sitting with and reevaluating and learning and leaning into. For myself, it all starts
with you as a therapist, of really being able to sit with and recognize and acknowledge what you're coming in with into the therapy space and what you're bringing into the circle. And so even with we do like a trauma-informed volunteer training, and that's that first piece of that training is, who are you and what are you bringing into the circle? And what are those things that you are carrying with you as who you are that maybe you can't change, but might be a way of connecting or a way of disconnecting with the people that you're supporting and holding space for. So like for myself, I'm a white heterosexual woman. I have an athletic built body. I'm blonde. I fit like the stereotypical surfer, like media look. And so coming into these spaces and holding spaces to welcome in women from all different backgrounds, all different body types, all different cultures, who have historically been excluded from these spaces, to come into this space and see me, it once again can trigger that feeling of like, oh, I don't belong here. I don't look like that. And so my body doesn't look like that. I don't have blonde hair. I don't come from this background. And so once again, this isn't for me. And so being able to recognize and honor that, and also recognizing like, I can't change who I am, but I can speak into it and acknowledge it and hold it and hold that space of recognition. And also one of the pieces that, like my personal work that I've been doing, is actually stepping back and holding space to train and elevate and celebrate other therapists and surf instructors that do come from those diverse backgrounds, giving them an opportunity to be leaders and to be facilitators in these spaces. So that way there is diversity in the leadership of groundswell surf therapy. And so we've opened up surf therapy for trauma recovery trainings in order to welcome in women and men from diverse backgrounds to really be able to enhance what surf therapy can be. And so while we're doing the trainings, there's also our facilitator training that really equips individuals to go out and facilitate and utilize our curriculum, but utilize it with their voice and within their culture and within their own connection to the ocean. In that journey of like, okay, I recognize like me showing up in these spaces can create barriers. For some people, me being a therapist, a licensed therapist, creates a barrier for them because there's this like long historical oppression within the therapy world that for some people showing up to a space held by a therapist automatically creates the lack of trust. And then for other people, I've had some individuals that come and they find out that I'm a therapist and I've had all these trainings. They're like, oh my gosh, okay, I feel so safe. I can be here. So the same part of me can trigger one person in one direction and another person in the other direction. Can make one person feel a sense of belonging and safety and make another person feel a sense of disconnect and lack of safety. And so I can't change who I am. Mm-hmm. But we can be intentional about welcoming in and elevating up different leaders in the communities that can speak into those different things and represent those different pieces and different experiences of life, and really being able to hold those spaces in a more powerful way.
That's fantastic. I love the idea of promoting the leadership and having that diversity within the organization, because then it normalizes and feels safer for people of color and people who may not have the background and feel like this is just not something I'm used to, or it doesn't feel like something I can relate to. And as far as additional barriers of treatment, getting to the ocean can be a financial burden. Trying to travel or try to get to these different places, it can be challenging as well. So, I mean, all these things are to be considered, it sounds like, and that you are taking that into consideration with your work. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, there are so many different barriers that keep, I mean, our work is specifically with adult women. So that specifically keep adult women, moms, from being able to access the ocean. From childcare to lack of transportation,
right,
having to work and take care of kids, single family households or single parent households, to also these elements of there's this culture around what it means to be a woman is also to be a caretaker and to put yourself last. And so there's no time to show up for me because I have to show up for everybody else first. And so to take this time to actually come to the beach and invest in yourself and do something that, it's not a workshop. It's not like checking boxes. It's really for you to experience joy and healing for your own betterment. And when you are your fullest self in the world, the whole world benefits from that. Your family benefits from that. Your community benefits from that, as well as the earth. And so being able to really look at what are these different barriers and also what are these different resiliencies that these different populations and communities have, and how can we tap into their resiliencies to create this space of welcoming rather than just recognize like, okay, these are the barriers, but what are the resiliencies as well? But so we do a lot of work with like Syrian refugees and different nonprofits that work with women who are going through homelessness or women who are getting out of sex trafficking or women who are experiencing like postpartum depression, eating disorders, women that come from the BIPOC or LGBT communities, and recognizing each has their own individual unique barriers. And how can we really show up and hold those spaces from being able to provide culturally appropriate surf gear that is covering to being able to provide carpools and or choosing the beach locations that we go to because they have public transport access. And so there's so many different little pieces and we're constantly learning and listening to the individual. We're like, one of our questions that we go through with our team and with our board is who's not showing up and why? And how can we, what are those barriers that keep them from being able to show up? And how can we adjust and attune to really support and like give them that power to be able to show up for themselves? And oftentimes after they've come to sessions, they've created this relationship with the ocean as like reclaiming it as their home, as a place that they do belong and that they do find their power and their healing in. And so they come back with their families and it starts this intergenerational shifting of not just an individual woman coming to the beach for her healing, but their family and their kids' kids all having this new relationship of real connection and healing and community and belonging in the ocean together.
That's beautiful. I couldn't agree with you more. I'm really enjoying this conversation. And I hope people who are listening, whether you're a clinician and interested in this form of therapy or a person seeking out something that is different than the conventional psychotherapies, this hopefully might be a direction for you. And I'd like to conclude with two questions. The first being for therapists who are listening and practitioners who are listening, who are interested in this form of treatment and specialization in this, where can they look? What resources do you recommend for people who are interested in getting trained in this form of therapy?
So for training, there isn't much right now. We have the International Surf Therapy Organization, which is kind of like bringing together all of the different organizations in the world that are doing surf therapy. So that's a great way to find surf therapy programs near you. As far as trainings, International Surf Therapy Org does have some trainings. As far as I know, we are the first ones that have CEU certified training course in surf therapy. And so we are certified by the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapy and are able to provide CE units for our trainings. And so we have a level one, that's a surf therapy for trauma recovery. And then we also have a surf therapy or trauma-informed training for volunteers that kind of gives like a little baby package. And then we also have an 8-week surf therapy facilitator course. So yeah. And also I want to encourage as for therapists that are listening, pairing surf therapy with individual psychotherapy and EMDR work has been extremely powerful. A lot of the therapists that we partner with, they'll report that their clients are able to like taper off their medications, that the EMDR, they're having really big breakthroughs in their EMDR work when their clients are doing surf therapy at the same time. Because it really helps kind of like integrate and get the stuff moving. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a really powerful pairing to do together.
Wonderful. Oh, that's exciting. And for people who are looking for a practitioner who specializes in, now I know surf therapy is specific. So for you, maybe you could tell us where people here in San Diego can find you. And if there are other clinicians that you're aware of, what resources can folks who are listening who are interested in this type of therapy, whether it's nature-based group therapy or surf therapy, do you have resources that we can provide for listeners who are interested in this?
Yeah. I mean, this is cutting edge stuff. We are in the process of building the research, and that's where International Surf Therapy Org is so great because they're really working towards like collecting the research. And they actually just had Jamie Marshall in Scotland is the first person to do a PhD in surf therapy. And so there's a lot of work towards surf therapy becoming something that you can get certified in as a practitioner, that you can have courses in your master's programs. It's not there yet, but that's one of the things that we are all working on together. And as far as resources for being able to find practitioners, that's one of the things that we are working in Groundswell, is as different practitioners go through our trainings, being able to have a good resource bank. So that way, whether you're in California or the West Coast or Colorado or Europe or Latin America, you can find therapists who have gone through these trainings and are utilizing surf therapy within their private practice. Up until more recently, surf therapy has mainly been within the nonprofit sector, and it's now starting to grow into like private practices and different clinical settings, which is exciting for me because I think that's part of that accessibility piece. When something is just in the nonprofit sector, that automatically closes it off to other people to be like, oh, well, I can use my insurance for this, or I can show up in this way. And so really being able to broaden and open those doors more widely, and bringing in more like accreditation to that. This isn't just like a cool summer surf camp. Like, this is real therapeutic work that's happening. And all of our programs are co-facilitated by a licensed therapist as well as a licensed surf coach.
Oh, well, Natalie, this has been such a pleasure. Sign me up. Like I said earlier, I will be in touch with you because I find this fascinating. And I think as a clinician, what a wonderful opportunity to expand not only something that I find so important, so integral in connection with the nature in that way for myself personally, but to bring that back into the clinical realm for my clients and for people around me, I think it's just fundamental. So I hope everybody who's listening, whether you're a practitioner or somebody who's interested in this form of therapy, that you got a lot of good information today. So Natalie, thank you so much for being on the show. This was wonderful. It was great having you, and really appreciate you giving us this information.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. The information and advice offered is not intended to treat or diagnose and is not meant to replace any other professional consultation. If you'd like to know more about the San Diego Psychological Association, go to our website at sdpsych.org. That's sdpsych.org. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, take care of yourself and be well.